Stand whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Al Stahaley, and you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1.
Morning, Houston. Welcome to Amplified Houston 90.1 KPFT, Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 at FM in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey. It is my pride and privilege to also serve as the CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we will be speaking with Mary Beck, who's the executive director of the Humane Society. But first, Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home, a nonprofit. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. All right. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. It's really nice to connect with you on this show. So, Mary, let's start by sharing your current role and your professional background in behavioral health settings, as well as now the Humane Society.
Yes. Well, I'm currently, for the past 7 months, have had the privilege of serving as the executive director of the Houston Humane Society. And previous to that, I was at the Council on Recovery for 22 years, working in addiction and mental health services. I've worked in nonprofits my whole career after I got my master's degree in social work at the University of Houston.
Yeah, so you really have been steeped in behavioral health and nonprofits for many, many years. You've got a wealth of experience and you're a consummate professional. But today we are going to be talking about a topic that is very personal, right? As you know, this show is inspired by the women at the Women's Home who come to us in an attempt to reclaim their lives. They do really hard work every day to help find their way out of substance use disorders and mental health conditions. And for many of them, they've experienced homelessness. And we are every day inspired by their courage and strength and willingness to do whatever it takes to recover. So today, Mary, you're going to share a very personal story about your family. And I'm so honored when people choose to share personal stories because that takes a lot of courage. So thank you for your courage. So we're going to talk to you today about your family and a child of yours who suffers with multiple mental health and behavioral health issues. So let's start from the beginning. Tell me about your child as an infant.
Yes. So I had my child, of course, and I actually gave birth to my child. I think that's important to define as well. As much as I loved him and still adore him tremendously, he cried 14 hours a day when he was born for months. Eventually, he slept through the night, and eventually, that piece got better, but then other things started to show up. I had no idea what he was struggling with because, as you know, babies can't talk. So it was hard to know what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I think a sentiment that's shared by all new mothers, right? If you're a new mother, you do not know what's going on. You feel like you're making it up as you go. You feel like, my God, is this really what it means to be a mother? And no baby can talk usually at all. They talk through their cry and they talk through other ways. But yeah, we all have that feeling of like, wow, is this really what it is? Through the sleep deprived, blurry eyes. But was there something that made you think that this was not normal infant behavior?
Sure. Since he's my only one, I didn't have a lot of references. A lot of people said, "Oh yeah, my baby cried a lot too." So I, kind of just let it sit there and we moved on. But after a couple years, he would have more tantrums than other kids would have at that age. But again, people are like, tantrums are normal at that age. But then some other interesting things started to happen. Like he had ex an extremely high vocabulary for a toddler. And I mentioned that because later that'll be important to make sense. But then he started having auditory challenges. So when he was in preschool, at first, he was, kind of like the little leader in the class, sat at the front of the table, talked more than the other kids. They were only two, so they didn't talk a whole lot. They would babble at each other. Around 3 to 4, there were sensory challenges. He started putting his hands over his ears. He didn't want to use scissors. He started not wanting me to put pants on his legs and would scream when we would have to leave the house. And then one of the more telling ones was if I drove a different way home, somehow he knew and would go into a full-blown tantrum. At the same time, he began in what late preschool, early kindergarten, was able to read, was able to have conversations and talk. Looked you in the eye, played with other kids. And I share all this a lot because as I was going through, and as you might be able to tell, eventually he was diagnosed with autism, but not till 11. See, and I already ruined it. I said he. So I was trying really hard
It's
not to say
okay.
that.
That's all right.
He was diagnosed then, but before that, it was a high anxiety disorder, then ADHD, then a social pragmatic disorder. And it's like the autism, even to professionals, he didn't represent the typical signs and symptoms. And I share that because as a parent, it's all a struggle, right? When your child struggles with their mental health or with their behaviors or anything they struggle with illnesses, it's hard to watch your kids struggle. But to watch them and not have answers, because in my mind, answers tell you at least what you can do, but not to have the answers. And then also, truly not to fit in with other parents who are struggling is really hard. Like even parents of other special needs kids don't think you belong. And that's, I think I say that because I want to relate to other parents who maybe were having the same experience that I had.
Well, that must have been just, I can imagine it, I would feel a real sense of isolation and loneliness around, what's happening with my kid. And were you a single parent at this point?
Yes, by the time he was two, yes. I mean, he has another parent that's in his life, but he spent most of his time has and does spend most of his time with me.
So single parenting, a child that has some differences, feeling isolated. I mean, That must have been a really hard time, especially before you actually knew what was going with your kid. And you said you didn't actually get a formal diagnosis until they were like 11, right?
Yes, that diagnosis. I had a anxiety diagnosis in first grade when he came home from school, and he had written his first story, and he started to cry, and I asked him what was going on, and he handed me the paper that had the story on it, and all it said, Anna, was, "My mom got shot and died. She had nowhere. My mom and I went for a walk. She got shot and died, and I have nowhere to live."
Oh my goodness.
And
I mean, as a parent, I can't imagine how your stomach must have dropped and you,
did.
like, oh my goodness.
And I was like, what is going on? Because I didn't, there's no significant trauma. There was no significant anything. He was diagnosed with a severe anxiety disorder. Told me that he thinks about his parents dying all the time. If we were 2 minutes late to get him from daycare, in his mind, we were in a car accident. In his mind, something happened to us. And it was kind of an obsessive thought process that he still has once in a while, but we've been able to work through over the years.
Yeah, but so Mary, help us understand, were all of these different disorders related to and a part of the autism, or were they separate and apart? Did he have the autism and then all of these others stacked on top?
Sure. Originally, they were separate and apart. So it was anxiety, then ADHD, then a social pragmatic disorder, which means you don't understand social conversation, social cues. And then a sensory processing disorder due to the hearing and his equilibrium. And then eventually the autism. Eventually, and I skipped one, a mood disorder thrown in there. Eventually, they said almost all of that is wrapped up into the autism diagnosis, except possibly the mood disorder piece, which is his is called disruptive mood disorder. And it is characterized by just waking up, feeling on guard, and feeling angry the moment you wake up, which is different, I think, than a explosive disorder or an oppositional disorder, which are usually triggered by something. This part was just because. We even had a little book when he was little, and it showed this kid kicking, and it talked about how the kid was learning to manage his emotions. And he looked at me, he's like, "That's me, that's me."
Oh, he could identify
He could,
himself.
yeah.
Oh,
It's amazing how many books are out there now that can help. If you type in the symptoms, there's a book that'll help your kid at least understand
That's
themselves a little
fantastic
better if
because
they,
that's,
if they're capable of reading, etc.
yeah. Well, we didn't have that when we
Yeah.
grew up, did
No.
we? No. So what, tell us about the impact of this cluster of disorders on, first of all, your child. Like, did they have challenges at school and with peers? Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, all the way from the beginning. He was asked not to come back to his preschool. He had done something with another kid, well, actually, he poured yogurt on another kid's head. And he told me later it was because the kid's voice was so annoying and the kid wouldn't stop talking. And he goes, "I asked him to stop talking." And then in first or kindergarten, his teacher told me that sometimes he'll go stand by the window because he doesn't like the high-pitched voices that some of the girls in the classes and even some of the boys had at that age. And as he got older, he would, if he got bumped into in the hallway, he would be like, "They're trying to kill me." I mean, it was just very sensory, a high sensory startle response, if you will. And so that made it difficult because his assumption was always negative. So then he would get in arguments with other kids. He would think teachers were against him. He would, and then his person, and it's always hard to tell because his personality, just in general, is stubborn and challenging, but he's driven and also caring and compassionate and loving.
Yeah.
And it was always hard to tell the difference.
Right. We're gonna talk a little bit more about that and then move on to some other topics. But first, I want to do a quick commercial break. Let's take a few seconds to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work to bring you the show are volunteers. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option 1 to become a sustaining member today. We are back. This is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition with Anna Coffey. I am interviewing Mary Beck today, and she is sharing a personal story about challenges that she's had with a child in her family who has multiple mental health and multiple mental health disorders. And Mary, so thank you so much for sharing all of this. How did you help your child weather this storm? Because, I want to just say one more thing. For those of you who are mothers out in the audience, you know that feeling that cracked open inside of you the moment your child was born. That love, that kind of almost vicious, savage love that most mothers have for their children. And so I can only imagine what it must have felt like for you to watch your child struggle like this. And so we're going to talk about how you dealt with that. But first, I want to hear, how did you prop your child up and get them through this incredibly difficult childhood?
As with many parents, like you said, Anna, that's a good descriptor of the heartbreaking open. I would do anything for him. And so I searched, tried different therapists, different doctors, different ideas, different occupational therapy, speech therapy, psychiatry, medication after that story that he wrote. I never thought I would choose medicine, but once you hear your child write that kind of story and feel that way, you at least think, well, we'll give it a try. We can always stop. And it did help. All of it helped over time. But it's kind of like a, I'm trying to think of an appropriate word to say. It's like a, there's a word, like a crapshoot, I guess. Like you're just throwing something at the
Rolling the
wall.
dice and seeing, like,
Yeah,
let's throw this at it and see if that works.
and I realized, Anna, I was lucky, blessed, whatever you believe in. I was that because I could go during the day. My job would allow, since I didn't work directly with people, I was more in the leadership administration end. I could, work in the evening or weekend or adjust or come in a tiny bit late, and still be successful in my career. I had the resources financially to be able to pay because a lot of these things aren't on insurance. Many are, but a lot aren't. But you also have to drive all over town from Memorial to the Med Center to, there's not one place to go do all this. And then I also was lucky for working in the behavioral health field because I had people who I could ask questions of, like, what might this mean? Where would you go for this? And I only imagine parents who don't have the time and the resources or the knowledge or the coworkers to lean on, how they make it through. I don't know.
So I that's a really good pivot there, Mary, because if you take off your parent hat for a moment, I know that's hard to do, but step into your professional role as a behavioral health specialist and a social worker. How is it, how compare and contrast the care for mental health to physical health? Like, where are we in the field of behavioral health and mental health issues compared to physical health issues?
So I believe we're much further behind in mental health issues. And that's not to demean some physical health issues that are behind other physical health issues, right? But overall, and I say that because, families or members of my family who have medical disorders, right? If you could do a blood test or urine test, and if you have diabetes, you can do an X-ray or a ultrasound and know if you have certain types of cancers. You can know with somewhat certainty that you have a certain disorder. But in mental health, it's based on what you're saying, and you might not be describing it the way the doctor understands or using the right language because you don't know it, or they're just basing it on behaviors. And so you fill out these 10, 15 page assessments that are about behaviors. Have you ever seen them do this? How often does this happen? And it's like, well, I don't know. Yeah. So you have to fill these out. And then they make a diagnosis based on that paper and on the interview, and maybe watching your child also behaviorally and asking them some questions. And then they prescribe a medication. And if it works, yay, they got the diagnosis right. If the medication doesn't work, oh, maybe we had the wrong diagnosis. So it's not based on science at all. At the same time, I always get confused because the psychiatrist is like, well, if you take this medicine, it affects your dopamine. So you need this one to affect your serotonin. So they balance together. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But then why isn't there a test that can test for the dopamine?
Right.
I mean, there might be, but it is definitely not accessible to the average person. And that's
frustrating. And you're right. I mean, it is sort of like shooting darts, for lack of a better metaphor. You know, oh, you're sad. Let's try some Prozac. Oh, you're anxious. Let's try, you know, something else for that. And then if you have both together, like, well, let's try one of each, or maybe this one will do everything we need it to. But there's no test to see which, you know, which drug your body is going to be right for you. And mm-hmm. it's just so frustrating because we've made so many advances in physical health care. But when it comes to mental health and the brain, I feel like we're still living in the dark ages. It's really tough. Okay, let's go back to Mary as a mom. How did your child's illness affect your life? Because we've been focused on what happened in their lives, but it had to have affected your life too.
Yeah, I cried so much myself, so many times. Go to the park and my son would be having fun with another kid, but then something would happen. He just didn't understand and he would get aggressive in some way. To be clear, he never got super physical, like really hurt someone, but he would chase or act like he was going to throw something and then wouldn't. But it was still, I mean, it scared other parents, it scared other kids, and I would feel so bad. And at the same time, he wanted to be social. Like, he's a very social kid. Mm-hmm. So I cried a lot. I struggled with my own depression and anxiety myself. I gained weight. I ended up having some physical illnesses. It impacted my relationships. You know, it's hard. Yeah. For another person to come in and understand. I don't even fully understand what's going on, right? So
right.
To be in a relationship with someone else who hasn't been around the whole time is difficult. It, you know, like I said, I was able to work, but it was definitely like a juggling act all the time, like constantly.
Yeah.
Actually, work really helped me. It was therapeutic to me in a way.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Well, and so how did you find support in your life for what you were going through?
So as I said at the beginning, is that was hard because we didn't quite fit in, right? I would show up at things for other kids with autism. And a lot of times the support groups, you know, the kids were nonverbal, had more severe challenges, mm-hmm. More physical disabilities, etc. And then I would talk about my son and they would all just stare at me or say I was lucky. And so that was hard. And then on the flip, and then when I had him transferred to a school for kids with autism and other learning disorders, I actually had a parent come up to me and go, well, but your kid's not autistic, is he? He just doesn't seem autistic.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Like, that just makes no sense. I don't know if she was just trying to understand herself, but it didn't feel good.
Yeah.
So what I started to do was put myself out there with some of my son's teachers and said, mm-hmm. if you ever run into any other kids that are similar, I'd be glad just to be there for their parents. I'd be glad to listen and, share my experience and listen to theirs. So I got a couple referrals, if you will, for lack of words. And
I'm
some of
sure
them,
those other moms were so happy to find you.
well, one of them in particular, their son is still one of my son's really good friends.
Oh,
And I'm still friends with them. And so it took some of that. And then also, leaning on and being finally willing to share more with my good friends who don't. Most of my friends don't have kids. But finding the couple who could really listen and understand versus people who want to try to fix it. Oh, there's no
There's no
fixing
fixing.
it. So,
Mary, we are almost out of
okay.
time, but I do want to just give you the opportunity. Certainly, there is at least one other mom listening to this show right now who is like maybe finding her own struggles with their child or finding it difficult to deal with some behavior that their child is exhibiting. What advice do you have for her, or what message do you have for her?
Kind of what your show's about with the resiliency piece, I liken it to being in a room where there's like 10 doors, maybe more, 50. And you got to just keep pushing them until one opens up that makes sense. And that seems maybe sounds easy for me now, but in hindsight, that's what it took. And then sometimes I'd need a break and I'd be like, I'm just not gonna deal with it right now for this week. Okay, but now I'm ready again. Let's start again. And then finding someone to talk to. People wonder sometimes why I'm willing to talk when this is really in their minds it's my son's story, and I'm like, no, it's my story
It's your
too.
story too,
Yeah, and
absolutely.
I trust that any adult on here wouldn't go talking to their kid about my kid. So you got to find your outlet that works for you: writing, talking, jogging, running, exercise, support, whatever, that your own therapist. I go to therapy. I'm not afraid to share it. So.
Mary, as we wrap up, I want to offer you just a brief moment to tell us what is your favorite thing about your child.
Thank you so much. Oh, my son can have the most philosophical, intellectual, meaningful conversations that, if you just get to know him and he feels comfortable, can be extremely joyful and engaging to
Oh,
listen to him.
so
It's
wonderful.
incredible.
Mary, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing this deeply personal story and sharing about your amazing son and what you've been through together. I just have so much respect for your journey, and to all the other moms out there, hang in there. Just keep going. What do they say? When you get to hell, keep going. You don't want to stay there. Just keep going.
Thank you so much,
So,
Anna.
thank you, Mary. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/thecottageshop. Be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey, Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.
So what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, but you can't drive high. You can run, but you can't drive high.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Utah Supreme Court dismissed a GOP appeal of a lower court's congressional district map, and a Virginia county judge who ruled against a redistricting ballot measure but was overruled by